Welcome to the Breakaway Podcast. We hope you're encouraged by the message and stick around for more at the end.
Well, my mother's favorite scene in Good Will Hunting is the moment when young Matt Damon bursts out in uncontrollable laughter. And it's an endearing moment because it feels so unscripted. It's so raw and honest and real. And if you don't remember the context, it's because he had just been explaining to his counselor that he had met this girl that was absolutely gorgeous and perfect in every way, but he was explaining to him that though she was perfect, he was not going to call her or make any moves to get to know her in a more intimate way. And he was explaining it was because at the distance they are now, she can remain perfect, and more importantly, she cannot see his flaws. So let's just keep it at this distance, sort of a safe distance where she doesn't get inside to see the real me that has imperfections and needs and wants and that sort of thing. So in response, his counselor, Robin Williams, explains that his wife used to fart in her sleep. And at times, it would be so loud that it would wake up not only her, but also the dog. And he was explaining this moment to make a point, and it's a point that is true. The idea he was saying is, when you think about getting married, you often think about these big ideal moments. You picture yourself at the altar looking your absolute best, your most gorgeous. You picture how you'll look in the photos afterwards. You picture yourself on the beach walking together in the best shape of your life, strolling down the beach. You don't think about when you get back to the hotel and she says, I got to go light up the bathroom. You know what I mean? You don't think about that moment. And the point Robin Williams was making was that when you get into marriage, you think about these kind of big, idyllic moments. But then something happens when you get married. There's all these other intimate little moments of living together that, though they seem inconsequential or silly or even embarrassing at times, these moments when it's the real you, unscripted, makeup off, no cameras, you not at your best moment, but at your most natural and unguarded, that they love you in that moment. And what you find is so beautiful about marriage is you begin to realize, I have a companion, someone who is with me in the best of moments, and who's right there with me in my weakest and smallest of moments. I get somebody who shares with me the extraordinary and the ordinary, the majestic and the mundane. That's the glory of marriage, is I have this companion who loves me when I'm at my best and when I'm at my worst. And that's the beauty of marriage. Now, why share that with you? Because that's where we are in the Lord's Prayer tonight. We're at the hinge. And if you notice, the first part of the Lord's Prayer, it's about those majestic moments, about those incredible moments. God, I want your kingdom to come. I want you to establish your rule on the planet. I want your will to be done on earth like it is in heaven. I want you to take over. I want you to establish a rule. And this first part of the prayer is our hearts getting on board with God. God, I want to ride out with you. You're my king. You're my commander. I want to suit up, mount up, and ride out with you as we see your kingdom established on the work and tyranny torn down, and mercy rise up, of injustice destroyed and justice rise up, of greed taken down and love restored. I want to see you take over the world. And we're at this moment where we say, God is not just our general who commands us out to go serve in his kingdom, and then at the end of it, we salute him politely and go back to our own tent to do our own little life. What we find in this text is we're meant to pray, your kingdom come, your will be done, and then will you give me bread? That he wants to be with us in the majestic moments, and he wants to be with us in the mundane moments. That we ride out with him to see his kingdom come. But it's not just this formal relationship where we salute him and then go back to our room. It's we ride out with him in battle, and then we sit around the campfire with him and cook dinner. That we go and strategize with him in the war room, and then we go in the kitchen and make a sandwich together. Your kingdom come. Your will be done. And God, I'm hungry. Will you give me some food? And God wants to be with us in the majestic and in the mundane, in the extraordinary and in the ordinary. And that's just beautiful. Jesus is teaching us this prayer, and he says, hey, some of you, your relationship with God is so formal, and you keep him at a distance. I do religion this way, and I just do it all just so, and then I go and I live my real life with my buddies over here. And God's saying, that's not the relationship I want. I want you to be in all these moments with me, and then I want to be with you in the intimate places. And he's inviting us here, and I want you to share with me your need. I want you to let me into what you want. I want you to share with me the most basic things in your life because I care. Give us this day our daily bread. That's where we are tonight, where the cosmic scope touches down with the daily need. But what's interesting is, if you notice the prayer, he says, give us this day our daily bread. He doesn't say, Lord, hook me up and make me stupid rich. I mean, just filthy. That's not what he says to pray. When Jesus is talking to us, he says, pray. And when you pray to God, ask him to provide for you. But ask him for enough to help you live in the moment, enough to keep you operational and alive and healthy to be right here in the moment. He says, pray, give me this day my daily bread. And so when I read that, I just naturally asked the question for me. I go, okay, so are we supposed to pray this? Because the truth is, most of us in here, we're not in jeopardy of running out of bread today. Most of us are not in a situation where we're like, God, unless you bring it from heaven, it is not coming. Lord, please. Like, we're not there. We're like, you know, I don't need to ask him for bread. There's plenty down the hall. I don't need to ask him for that. We're covered. So maybe this is just a prayer for poor people. I got this thing locked down. But the truth is, he doesn't say, hey, this part of the prayer is for the poor. He says, I want you all to pray like this. There's something about this mindset he wants all of us to grab. Give me this day my daily bread. And so it's interesting, I tell young people this, when you get married, when you're engaged, one of the most important things you'll figure out when you're engaged is, how are we going to handle stuff? How are you going to spend money? How do I spend money? How do we, as we build our life together, how are we going to interact with material goods? How are we going to spend our money? And here, as we talk about this intimate relationship with God, God is giving us, here's the perspective I want my people to have. As you walk with me, I want you to talk with me about what you need and what you want. And here's the kind of conversations I want to have when we relate to stuff, which is an important question I'm sure a lot of you ask. How does God want us to view money? Where are we supposed to land on the spectrum between St. Francis and Creflo Dollar? St. Francis gave all his money to the poor. And his dad was so sick of him giving away all his money, his dad locked him in a cellar and had the authorities tell him, if you don't start investing your dad's money, he's going to disown you and get rid of your inheritance. And so Francis, in response, gave his dad all his money back, and it gave him even the clothes he was wearing, stripped them down, handed them to his father, and walked off naked into the woods. And some of us read that, and we go, that's a true story. And you go, I don't know if God, is God looking for us, just woodland nudity? I don't know that that's his goal. But then on the other side, you've got pastors with multi-million dollar homes and luxury Manhattan apartments and Rolls Royces and jet planes. And you go, okay, is that too far? Like, where are we supposed to land on the spectrum of stuff? And it's interesting, God's inviting us to pray, and he stresses this. This day, our daily bread, there's a mentality he wants to give us. And the reality is, you see this mentality all through his relationship with his people. And I'll summarize it for the sake of time, but here we go. You see it in the Old Testament. You see in the book of Exodus, he leads his people out of slavery. God loves setting slaves free. And he leads his people out of slavery in Egypt, and they're raw. They're not a cohesive group of people. They've been in slavery for generations, and God's like, okay, I'm forming you into my people. You're going to become the community of God. And they get out into the desert, and they get hungry. And so God tells them in Exodus 16, he says, hey, guess what? I'm going to rain down bread from heaven. But then he tells them in Exodus 16, he says, I'm going to rain down bread from heaven, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day that I might test them. He says, okay, I'm going to drop all this bread out of heaven, and I'm going to provide for you, but I want you to be disciplined enough to only grab as much as you need for that day. And so I want you to go out there and not try to grab all you can. Just get as much as you need for that day, and everyone else will do the same, and we'll go home and eat. And he says, I'm doing it as a big test to see if you'll obey me or not. And sure enough, some people tried to hoard a bunch of it, and God got mad at them. God told them later, I want you to work 6 days, gather this manna. On the seventh day, don't. Take Saturday off. Just hang out with your family. Worship me. I want you to relax. And some of them got rid of that vacation day and tried to hoard even more then, and God got mad at them. Stop doing that. He had to threaten to kill him to get him to relax. And you go, what's going on with that? Why does he care? And God explains it. This is why I'm doing this to you. In Deuteronomy 8, he tells them. He says, I'm giving you this command that you might live. And then he tells them that I humbled you and fed you manna in the wilderness, that I might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. He said, the reason when I was forming my people, I just wanted you to collect enough for one day at a time, is because I was training you. And listen to this. This is why you're poor right now. He's doing it to you on purpose. He's saying, I made you have to live day by day because it helped you sync up with reality. I'm doing this. The reason I did this is because I don't want you to be shallow. Shallow people just think about the physical. And he said, I'm going to feed you every day, just day by day, because I want you to sync up with the reality that the world's not just the physical. There is a spiritual, and you're alive because I let you be alive. And he tells them this in Deuteronomy 8 because he's led them up to the promised land he's about to give them. And this is what he says to them. He says, I'm about to lead you to this land where there are brooks of waters, fountains, springs, flowing water, wheat, barley, vines, fig trees, pomegranate, a land where you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing. And he says, and you will eat and be full. He says, here's the deal. I did that to you to show you that you don't just live by the physical, but there's a God in heaven. Because here's the deal. I'm about to lead you into this land where there's a bunch of stuff. Where there's no scarcity, where you're going to have multiply. It's not evil to be rich. He says, I'm going to hook you up. I'm going to give you a lot of land, a lot of livestock, a lot of food, a lot of resources. But he said, I did this to you earlier because, he said, I don't want you to get there. He said, beware lest you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand has gotten me this wealth. So you will remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gave you power to get wealth. He said, the reason I want you to pray every day, Lord, give me today my daily bread, is because I want you to be synced up with reality. God is concerned with a distortion of our perspective. He says, if you grab too much and you become about grabbing it, he says, you'll forget me. You'll think I'm not up there. And worst off, you'll think that all this is because you pulled it off. By my might, I made myself rich. One of my favorite movies growing up was Superman. The one back in the 70s, Christopher Reeve. And I remember Christopher Reeve, there's this moment where he picks up Lois Lane and he takes her off flying. And as they're flying around, initially she's nervous. She's never flown before in this kind of way, so she's apprehensive about it. And he's holding her tight and she's getting used to it, acclimating. And then there comes a moment where he kind of stretches her out and they're flying among the clouds and they both have their arms outstretched. And they're flying along, and it's this beautiful moment that I usually fast forward because there's this dorky poem the whole time. But this moment occurs where they're both flying around, and it gets to the point where she's starting to feel more stable, more comfortable, less off balance, and she feels like she's got it under control up there. So there comes this moment where she's starting to feel pretty good about herself. And so she looks over at Superman and kind of gives him this smirk and lets go and begins to plummet to her death. Because she was struck by a moment of insanity. She thought for a minute that we were flying up there. No, we weren't flying. Superman was flying, and he was holding you. And the minute you think, oh, we're flying, no, you've lost touch with reality, woman. And God is saying here, I want you to be careful around money, because here's the deal. He said, you're going to start thinking that you did this. And some of you will. You'll get out of here and get a job, and you'll think, this is my money. It's not. You were born in the suburbs. You had the benefit of growing up in a house where you weren't chewing on lead paint. Did you have anything to do with that? Just by virtue of where you're born, you have a 1,000% chance of attaining wealth more than a kid born 30 minutes down the street in the inner city. You've got about 1,000,000% better chance of attaining wealth than kids born in Nepal. Did you do that? Did you contribute at all to your ability to think and feel, or for your heart to continue to beat? You don't do any of that. It's all a gift. And so God says, when you get around money, I want you to stay in tune with the reality that it's not just these physical things you've amassed that keep you alive. It's God who keeps you alive. Do that to stay humble. He does it so we won't distort our perspective. And what he's really trying to save us from is not just a distortion of perspective, but a derailing of our purpose. Because he told the people in the Old Testament, if you forget the Lord your God, you will go after other gods and serve them, and I warn you, you will die. See, in the Old Testament, he said, if you start to chase the amassing of things, he said, you'll forget me. And then you'll do what the other nations do. They go to other gods. Now, why did they go to these other gods? Because they were all gods of crops, and you would give to them to try to manipulate them so you could gain more crops. It was just to get physical things. And you would sell your kids to be temple prostitutes or burn your kids alive in an offering to the gods so that they would bless your crops. You would sell out people to get more stuff. Or you would amass land and you would subjugate the poor and use them. And what happened is, he said, the scariest thing is if you begin to obsess about money and obsess about goods and obsess about things, he says, you've derailed from the fact that it's me that keeps you alive. You've touched with that. But it's not just that. You've also distorted your purpose. He said, because you've been created to love God and love people. And if you get too obsessed with physical things, you'll forget God and use people. And you will completely derail on why you're here on the planet. And some of you say, well, Ben, I don't know if I'll do that. Well, let me tell you something. What does it look like when a group of people become so obsessed with the physical, they totally derail in their purpose? Let me just show you November of this year at a Walmart where they're selling Xbox games. I do. We skipped the part where the pregnant lady got stepped on and the kids got pepper sprayed and the 35-year-old man was trampled to death for waffle irons, towels, and video games. That's in America, by the way, that we can get so caught up with stuff that we forget God and trample people to get stuff. And unless you go, those silly poor people, I would never kill someone for a video game. In 2008, when the financial crisis hit in America, 9 of the top banks that caused the financial collapse, that caused many of your parents to lose their jobs, that caused many people to suffer around the country, those people that lost $81 billion of your money, those companies, the top 9 banks that took bailout money, in 2008, the year they sent our economy into the garbage, they paid out $32.6 billion in bonuses, not paychecks, that they cost millions of people around the country their savings. I know people that lost everything, old people, that their retirement was dwindled down to $1,000 in a day. We saw our own bank accounts drained. Where did that money go? The people who caused the crisis gave themselves $32.6 billion in bonuses that year. And I listened to an interview where a reporter went to a bar on Wall Street and she asked them, do you feel guilty about this? And he said, survival of the fittest. I'm smarter than the average person. The fact that I benefited from the bailout is because I'm smart. I took advantage of a situation and 95% of the population doesn't have that common sense. Bro, you have derailed. God made you to love God and love people. And you step on people to get stuff. And let me tell you something. I met kids when I was here in college. I had a guy say to me, my goal in life is to make $1 million by the time I'm 30. If that's your goal, if your goal is to make $1 million, can I just tell you something? That's like me saying my goal for my iPhone is for it to be a great doorstop. It's a complete waste of its potential. I want this to be the best doorstop ever. And you're going to take the body God gave you and the heart he gave you, and the mind he gave you, and set a goal of just attaining physical things? Open your eyes, man. You don't have anything he didn't give you. And in Luke chapter 12, Jesus told the story of the parable of the fool who gained all this money. And he said, what do I do with all this? I build bigger barns and throw a party. And he said, fool, you're dead tonight. And you missed out what you were made for, to be rich towards God. And then Jesus looked at his people and he said, hey, my people, he said, don't worry about what you're going to eat. Don't worry about what you're going to drink. Don't worry about what you're going to wear. He said, the nations worry about that stuff. He says, you seek the kingdom and I'll add these things to you. He makes you a promise. You run with me and I'll hook you up. That's Jesus' promise to you. You walk with me and I'll take care of you. And not only will I take care of you physically, I will let you be a part of my job, which is changing the world for the glory of God and the good of humanity. And my kingdom lives on forever. That's amazing. Then he says, hey, there's two options here. You can go with the world, which will trample people for a toaster and steal from the poor to feed the rich. Or you can come with me and you'll make enough money to live and you won't live for money. You'll be free from it, the stress and anxiety of it. I've watched so many people ruin their lives because they're obsessed with money. And I stood in this room and saw the most excited, happiest, most thrilled worship session of Breakaway ever. And you know when it was? It was when you gave your money away to save the lives of little girls last year. There's something about it. We're meant to use things for something bigger. And so it's okay if you make money. Some of you will make money without even trying. I have friends like that. They're like, whoops, I just made $1 million. Wow. And you're good at it. You're just good at it. Others of us, you'll get a job and you'll earn a good amount. But there's some of you that you will try to aim your whole life at amassing things and you'll miss what you're made for. And you'll sacrifice your spouse and your kids on the altar of money. Don't do it. Give us this day our daily bread while we seek your kingdom to come and your will to be done. There's a movie, Schindler's List, where if you've seen it, it's a true story. A guy who was making money off the war profiteering. Let me see the destruction of humanity so I can make money selling bullets. Right? And then he saw what was happening to the men and women and children around him in Nazi concentration camps. And he said, I cannot just amass my little kingdom while the world burns. And so he took his kingdom and he had enough to live on, but he began to leverage his money to save children and families and generations of people. And if you watch the movie, do you remember at the end, he hits the finish line and he's looking around and he sees his ring and he says, why did I keep this? This could have been 5 people. Why did I keep this coat? I could have sold this coat and got like 10 more people. And he starts thinking like that. Why did I keep these stupid things that don't matter when I could have been a part of something that will? And his friends comforted him in saying, man, with what you did leverage, you saved generations of families. And let me tell you something. That's the life I want for you. Don't worry about what you're going to eat. Don't worry about what you're going to drink. Don't worry about what you're going to wear. I don't think anyone in here is going to die of starvation. You learn a skill and you get a job. And you make enough money to live on, but you don't live for money. You wake up every day and you acknowledge, I eat because God gave me the resources to make money. And God put me in a place where I can use these skills to make it. And then God has a purpose for my life, for his kingdom to come. And when I set my gaze on his purposes, he makes a promise that he'll take care of me. I ride out with the king who will feed me and let me be a part of his great campaign of rescue for his glory and for their good. And that's the life we're meant to live. That's when life gets fun. Ask me so that your joy may be full.
Welcome to the Breakaway Podcast. My name is Jeremy, and I'm here with Ben Stewart, and we are sitting in the Breakaway office after our meeting last night together in Reed Arena, and it was an amazing night of worship with Shane and Shane, and they came and stepped in to help us, and we've actually had not only just a great night, but a great weekend leading into the night, because we just finished our lead conference, which was a blast and so much fun. And I know, Ben, you spoke there and helped guide that. And I just I think it was an amazing weekend leading into even last night.
Totally, man. And for those who don't know, this was something experimental we did this year of just let's put on a conference just for leaders. And it turned out great, man. We had 400 plus students there. I don't remember what the final count was, but just getting to walk around and talk to them. And some of them are student government leadership positions. Some were in the Corps, some were leaders in their fraternities, sororities, Christian organizations, and just the energy of being in that room with all these people that are even now presently in influential positions, but are in those positions with a heart that's humble enough to say, Lord, I want to be better and help me be better. So there was just this great vibe in the room the whole time. And, you know, the Shanes are so much fun. And they were that right mix of kind of goofy, but also just so worshipful. Mm-hmm. And Greg Mott did a tremendous job teaching them. Our breakout speakers were unbelievable. So this was experimental for us. But, man, I just felt like it was a big win for these students and for us. I left very energized. It was awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah, very encouraged by what God did. And I know we were praying that it would be a time of just kind of shepherding for these leaders and that God would shepherd them and pastor them like a good father. And it really, by the end of it, that's what happened. I mean, I believe that these students were guided by him and just had space to grow and learn. It was so cool.
Totally, man. And we may package up. You know, we've had people ask, can I hear the talks? We don't know how we'll do that. I don't know if we'll make them podcasts, but we'll find a way to package them and get them out or something.
Yeah. I don't know what is going on, man, but like the last 3 weeks of Breakaway leading up to last night have been, not to overstate it, but like epic breakaways. It just feels like they've becoming these like bigger and kind of crazier and more exciting and just like God is doing so many cool things. And last night was just another one to add to the books. Like it just seems that after this weekend with the conference, the momentum of that, and then the Shanes coming to lead us, which they do a great job of just ushering in the Spirit of God. And then ultimately like us getting to do what we've been praying about for like a while now, which is launch this project we call Shalom.
Yeah.
And so that happened last night as well. And we won't go into a ton of details, but will you just tell us a little bit about the heart of Shalom and just kind of what we're doing with that? So those who are listening now that aren't familiar with it can kind of catch up with us.
Totally. Well, we call it the Shalom Project because Shalom's the Hebrew word for peace. And several years ago, we were talking about this idea of Jesus coming to bring peace. He's the Prince of Shalom. And so we are to go out and be peacemakers, see where are people in the world hurting and not flourishing, and can we go make a difference in that? And so a couple of years ago, we started doing this and just praying about, okay, Lord, where would you have us? Yes, we're going to be in here worshiping and reading, but where would you have us sort of lean towards an issue that we could make a difference? And so our staff has really been praying and struggling the last couple of years about this. And last year, the idea of girls, kids stuck in sex trafficking, slavery situations was like, this is the issue of our day. This is the issue for Christians to rise up and make a difference in. And so last year, we supported some organizations that got kids out of slavery. And this year, as we came back around, we thought we want to aim in that direction again, but we're looking at doing it a little differently. And so we struggled a lot to land on where we are. And so we're very excited about partnering with this organization, Tiny Hands International, that's helping to stop young girls being trafficked out of Nepal into the brothels of India. Mm-hmm. It's one of the poorest countries in the world and one where one of the largest percentages of girls yearly being pulled into this industry is happening. It's one of the places where the fabric of society is totally breaking down. And so there's an organization that's jumped in with some clarity of building these homes to shelter the absolute least of these, the orphaned and abandoned and abused children of Nepal, a place where they can be loved, cared for, educated, served medically, taught the gospel and given life, and they need some homes built, and by the grace of God, we want to do it. So there's a lot more to say. And so I think we're going to do a separate podcast just of the announcement I gave so people can get their heads around it. But all that to say here, we're very excited about it. It's something that's been on our staff's heart a long time, and bringing students around it. It was hard for me to read in the moment if students were on board with me or not, because it was such abrupt, like, welcome to Breakaway. People are slaves, you know, but afterwards, the students came up to me, they came up with a real passion of, we do want to make a difference in this. This is a time to rise up. And I just love that CNN had on their homepage a couple days ago an article, their lead article entitled Christianity's New Abolition Movement. and it was talking about how in different parts of the U.S., and I would say in parts of the world, Christians are leading the charge to say, this is an evil that needs to stop. And I love that a secular news organization is looking and saying, this is what Christians are up to. They're up to helping the least among us. And so we want to join that. So, like I said, more to say, but I think we'll do a separate podcast on it.
Yeah, so excited about this project and just that we got to kick it off last night and kind of you cast that vision. And so we want everybody listening to this to be able to track with us and to be a part of that. And so we'll, like we said, we'll put up another podcast so you can find out more details, how you can get involved, how you can give toward this. And just want everybody to be in prayer just that, like, God would really do what he wants with this whole project that'll be going for 4 weeks now. So we're super excited about it.
And totally, man.
Cannot wait for people to join with us in just getting as much as we can resource-wise to these children and to the ministry there in Nepal. So it's going to be great. And then last night was our fourth week in this series of the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
And you just, those of you listening, just heard the talk that you gave last night, Ben. And this is one of those times where we just get to sit down here and kind of talk about it, reflect on it, and also just maybe you can add things to what you didn't get to say last night.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised. You just told me you don't have that much.
I don't.
It's
as much
shocking.
As I rushed through the night. Because we had Silver Taps, had to get out early. And I looked at the clock and was like, and I have 15 minutes. So
you wrapped it up.
I took a little more than that. But I did edit out some stuff. But I think I said the heartbeat of what I wanted to say. It's interesting when you look at a text like, give us this day our daily bread. Okay, preach a sermon on that. You know, like, we could have gone the direction of we're invited to present God our needs. And so we talked about that a little bit, that that's the kind of relationship he wants to have with us. It's not all formality. It's let me into every need of yours. Cast all your anxieties upon him because he cares for you, is what Peter will say. I mean, and that's a beautiful relationship. And I just love the way the Lord's Prayer does that. Your kingdom come, your will be done. And I need bread. I need to eat while I'm all about your kingdom. And I just love that God gets that. That's what Luke 12 is about. God saying, yes, seek my kingdom and I'll feed you. And he says, this is the kind of relationship I want. You set your gaze on my priorities, and I promise I will take care of the details. I just think, what a great that's a promise from God. That's unreal. But what we focused on more was, I just thought it was interesting that he says, give us this day our daily bread. Like, why does he stress it that way? And you see all through the Bible that the Bible talks a lot about money because, like we pointed out in Exodus, God sees the danger of it. You begin to focus on it and amass it, you will care less about God and more about hoarding things. And the more you become focused on hoarding things, the less you will also care about people. And so things, stuff, steel and metal and cloth and fabrics will make you deny God and dishonor people. You're created to love God and love people. And so it's dangerous. How you handle things is dangerous. And so Proverbs 30, I think it's beautiful. He says, give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who's the Lord? Or I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. He says, I want to be careful that I don't get in a situation financially where I forget God or steal from people. He says, my main concern is a way of interacting with money that will make me dishonor God or disrespect people, and I want to avoid that. And that's the right heartbeat. I think all of us, we should walk into that and go, man, I'm alive because God wanted me to be alive today. Yes, I'm working at a job and get a paycheck, but I'm one car wreck away from not being able to spell my name. You know what I mean? Like, just think it through for a second. I don't even know what's happening internally. I'm one seizure away from not being able to breathe. Yeah, like we're much more dependent than we want to realize sometimes. And so Jesus is telling us, pray daily, acknowledge that I'm here because he allows me to be, and he has purpose for it. And so daily provide for me what I daily need to live, because I'm here for your kingdom to come and your will to be done. So I would encourage people, you know, you give a talk like this, and you're like, so you're saying it's wrong to have money. No. And God told them, I put you in the desert and gave you almost nothing, and then I put you in the promised land and give you a ton of stuff. God will put them in both situations. But he wants to make sure in both that they hold stuff very loosely. And so I know guys that make millions. They just make money. They make a lot of money, and but they don't love it. It's just God's given them the ability to make money, but they hold it loosely. They give it generously. They don't love it. They love the kingdom of God. And then I know people who don't make much money, but they love it, and they hoard it, and they think about money a lot. And so the danger is not just for the rich. It's for all of us. How are you thinking about money? Do you grab it and say, this is mine? Or do you acknowledge that it's from God, that we have life and breath and everything else? And so I would just encourage all of you listening with Luke 12. Am I setting my mind on the things of God? Am I excelling at the revealed things he's called me to? Am I seeking his kingdom? Is that my heartbeat? And then if it is, then you rest, because the children of the righteous will never beg for bread. And he knows what you need, and he will gladly meet your needs. So I've certainly found that true in my life. I think about money. We budget. But I found as I do my best to seek what I know the Lord's called me to do, he has always met my family there financially. And that's exciting to know that. I'm on mission with God for the things of God. I'm not here to just gather several things in a room. So I hope people will live for something bigger. Mm-hmm. That was my heartbeat anyway, is God, feed me and let's ride out for your kingdom.
Mm. That's wonderful. Well, thank you, Ben, and thank you guys for listening to the podcast. And we do count it a privilege to be able to sit here and do this and talk about what God is doing here in College Station and with Breakaway. And we just want to say thanks for listening to this Breakaway podcast. And we look forward to being with you next week. We're going to be back in Reed Arena, and it'll be our first night where students can come and actually start giving toward this project. And we will unfold online through our website, through Facebook, through Twitter, basically every kind of like social media outlet that we can, the Shalom Project. So we'd love for you guys to track with us and get connected to this, and then stay with us because we'll start giving updates along the way. And just really excited about how it's going to unfold as we trust God with what he's going to do with all of this. And so then next week we'll all be back together in Reed Arena for Valentine's night.
Oh man, that's next week?
Yes. Ooh. So happy early Valentine's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, see you soon.
Great. Bye.